Good afternoon or good evening if you're watching from Europe or Moscow. Welcome to this edition of the Scott Ritter Show. You know, one of the main objectives of this show is to bring critical Russian voices to non-Russian audiences. And today we have a wonderful opportunity. You know, we in the West, and I'm sure it's the same in Russia and elsewhere, we're sitting on the edge of our seats in anticipation of what's next in the conflict in Ukraine. There's been, a buildup of expectations, and there's just a lot of uncertainty. And so I could think of no better person to bring on to discuss this than our guest today, Andrey Klintsevich. People who are familiar with the show might remember Episode 10, where I had the opportunity to speak with his father, Franz, a Russian senator. Andrey is an expert. I think people who watch Russian TV see him. He's a frequent guest on shows providing his expertise. He's a Russian officer or former Russian officer. He was an officer in the Special Forces Regiment of the Airborne Troops, so not just any officer, but it's an honor and a privilege to have you on today, and thank you very much for coming. I'm going to start off with breaking news. A good friend of mine and a colleague named Seymour Hersh just published an article about the destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines. In this article, he points a condemning finger at the role played by the United States and Norway in attacking a critical piece of European energy a European energy system. What is Russia doing about this? What's your take on this? My understanding is that Russia claims that they have done their own investigation. They have their own conclusions. Now that something like this has come out, what's Russia's next step?
You know, it's a good question how our political and military leaders are going to react to that, because it is very important, but under the current circumstances, probably it's going to be kind of postponed decision. We do understand that this special military operation is being conducted, and since there is some fingerprints of the NATO armies which attacked the infrastructure, but the activity was taken, there was no marks on the explosive, there were no fingerprints on the explosive, there were no like made in Britain, made in the USA explosives. Probably there was some debris under the surface, but at the high level, we'll be honest, there was a marine operation, there was explosives in several spots. From our understanding, the American helicopter, which at that point of time was participating in that operations, probably submerged special timer machine, and there was explosive in advance, and it was expected in some time. The helicopter which came back from the special marine vessel and was in this area, probably it submerged the special timer for the explosive, but it would be very difficult to prove. We do understand that, but under the circumstances of this geopolitical confrontation, which we see right now with the collected and united West under the leadership of the U.S., will be difficult to do anything. It is important to see that, you know, there is a kind of attack not against Europe, but not against Russia, but against Europe. Now we're switching our pipelines of gas to Asia. That's going to give a huge impetus to India development, Pakistan, and those countries which lacked some deficit. So the supply of gas and the supply of oil increased more than fourfold. It's 400% to India. So again, them an opportunity to get access to the cheap resources.
Just a quick follow-on question, because here in the United States, we're led to believe that the new round of sanctions targeting Russian oil and gas is going to be very effective. You live in Russia. How do you feel the impact? Do you feel the economic impact? Do you feel that the Russian economy is damaged, is shrinking? Or, as you indicated, is Russia able to find sufficient alternative outlets for its energy?
You know, in the past, apart from military service, I also had the official state service, and I was the employee of the Ministry of Economic Development. I was responsible for foreign economic affairs with particular countries. I'm not going to elaborate on that right now. So we prepared for the confrontation against the West. In advance, we did our best to avoid the possible collateral damage. So there was a threat of SWIFT switch off, so we created our own payment system. So we created our banking cards, MIR, which are accepted worldwide. So we prepared for all those measures by the West. So we also assumed that the European market would be closed for us and the market of those countries where we provided our fuel to. And we prepared for that in advance. A couple of figures. The point is that there are refineries, oil refineries in Russia. They worked to the extent of 70% capacity because we exported oil. It was much easier for many companies. They had long-term contracts. So far, right now, all these refineries are working 200 capacity because we are enjoying high added value supply chain of oil. So the companies switched their pipelines to different consortiums and companies providing oil to them, to different oil pipelines. I'm going to give you an example. A colleague of mine who works in a big company, he says, you know, there was a special requirement, international requirement. We as oil exporting countries didn't have the right to spend our money, but in our industry right now we earn so much, we don't know what kind of new business to start, which is not going to be our core business. It proves that the Russian companies are starting to earn a lot of money, getting a lot of foreign exchange profit and earnings. So this very rapid appreciation of ruble says that in our current account there is a huge supply of foreign exchange in our budget. You know, the West, together with the and led by the U.S., were not right a strategic calculation of our steps. You know, we enjoyed more benefits rather than drawbacks, and we earned a lot for 2022, particularly. Yes, we experienced huge expenses connected with the special military operation, but deducting those expenses and deducting other spending by the public, the budget would be enjoying surplus. So we earned more than we planned.
That's an important message I think people need to hear in the West, that the sanctions have not done what they're supposed to do. Now let's transition over to the military side. Well, it's sort of the political military. Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has just made a European trip. He has been in the, I'm trying to be politically correct, but I need to be on the begging mode. He is begging for assistance, begging for weapons, begging for money. What's your assessment of this? Is his trip going to succeed? Is NATO going to open up their bank vaults, their arsenals, and give Volodymyr Zelensky everything he's asking for? And if they do, is this going to have a meaningful impact on the battlefield for Russia?
You know, I'll start with general trends. As our the Security Council Secretary of Russia, which is a collective agency including certain ministers and under the leadership of the president, says that we deal not with the Western countries, but with the countries which are under the control of the Western capital. It's multinational companies in some countries, particularly the military industry, and they dictate the terms what to do. What we are witnessing right now, we see that American corporations, military corporation enterprises, allocated different sectors in which they're going to work. And those areas, they are starting to kill European producers of armory and weapons. For example, Leopard tank provision says that the countries which are going to do that are going to have Abrams tanks instead of that, and they're going to sign new contracts. The same situation is true for the aircraft. Lockheed Martin company proposes buying F-35 jet fighters, and it is trying to kill Eurofighter company Typhoon, which is headquartered in four countries, even though the Germany is the headquarters of this consortium providing this aircraft, gave up the idea of using this. And they're going to buy F-35A jet fighter. So we are to see huge fight on the battlefield, and like Lloyd Austin, the defense secretary of the US, says that the forthcoming months is going to be no return point now. There is a step to take by Russia, and this huge offensive we are preparing for is going to be a huge acid test for the Ukrainian army, for their resistance. They will not be able to do something new because of the supply of tanks, jet fighters. This is summer and autumn time. Now the task is to stabilize the front and in summertime try to kill the land corridor to the Crimea. As for the Britain, we see right now that the Americans in Ukraine, apart from weakening Russia, are trying to test their military concepts. I'd like to remind all those audience that at the end of 2021, the American headquarters for training and TRIDOC doctrine tried a new concept, which is called Operation 2028, where they manifested that they are moving from the brigade system to the division system, and there's going to be a division of breakthrough, which are going to consist only of tanks, which huge high-tech engineering assistance, artillery systems, and special fighting helicopters. Right now, the formation of the tank division, of the present, so-called present division, consisting of the West tanks, we see that the Americans will be shaping so-called the division of breakthrough in Ukraine for their counter-offense. Of course, helicopters and jet fighters are required for that attempt. In their assistance package for 2023, we see that apart from other systems, they're going to provide 2,000, to be precise, 4,000 of special rockets and anti-tank rocket missiles, Hellfire probably, used by the fighting helicopters. So only the British leaders have these Apache American-produced helicopters, and we see that the Ukrainian pilots are being trained on these Apache helicopters. I believe that the first stage of this route is going to be asking for these helicopters, but without these helicopters, this called breakthrough division offensive will be impossible. And the second point, everybody is trying to understand which multifunctional jet fighters are going to be provided to Ukraine. We talked about F-16 and American jet fighters, and you know the destruction is going to have a huge impact of the American image. Of course, F-35 and F-16 in new modifications are not going to be provided, but this is the image, and you can sell these countries which are going to provide old Soviet jet fighters to Ukraine. So I do not rule out the opportunity that Typhoon are going to be provided by Britain. They have 180 Typhoon jet fighters, and since they're majority stakeholders, they're not going to ask anyone to do that, as the British have F-35, and they're going to increase the number of these jet fighters. So for the American military industry, everything is going to be great.
You know, when the United States started providing significant military resources in May, when they passed the new Lend-Lease Act, they call it $45 billion, and from May until July, August, this equipment was used to reconstitute a significant Ukrainian military force, which in September carried out a counteroffensive that compelled Russians to withdraw from the Kharkiv region in the right bank of Kherson. And now Ukraine is talking about, as you alluded to, a new offensive focused on Mariupol, severing the land bridge, attacking Crimea. They were successful somewhat in September. Should Russia be concerned about this new offensive? Are the Ukrainians going to be able to capture Mariupol, to threaten Crimea? It sounds impressive. Apache helicopters, F-16 fighters, Leopard tanks. Is this something Russia's prepared to deal with?
We should be worried, we should be concerned, since this equipment is going to be used on the battlefield. We saw that in Kharkiv region, when the fast mobile groups on mobile platforms Hamri provided special operations, and it compelled Russian forces to move. Every military doctrine understands that the resistance consists of three things: army, the capital, and the allies. The area, the territory, is a kind of a checkmate board. That's what we are positioned on. Since our defense was not the based on the front line, but on special checkpoints, so the fast movement was very dangerous for our army. Right now, the front line and the defense line from Zaporozhye region to Melitopol, where Ukraine is planning to move to have this land corridor, has a very fortified engineering platform, and only tanks can go through that, and these mobile groups are not able to do this anymore. Apart from tanks, of course, a huge problem is going to be around 200 Humvee with TO2 sets, anti-tanks sets, and they are mobile, and they proved to be effective. You know, one of the curious things, Javelin anti-tank missile rocket was not that effective, and the TO2 former version as our special equipment is more effective compared with Javelin. We're going to fight against it, but the question is, so when these special divisions are going to be shaped, when they're going to move and start the offensive, we will be starting our own operations, and the front line may change a lot. Probably the front line within the military concept on big rivers, as in Kherson region, the defense line is along Dnieper, large river, and to move across Dnieper is not going to be very easy, because our air jet fighters can prevent that. The Western countries and the Ukrainian forces have a huge advantage, which we have to fight against, and we cannot change that. This is a huge satellite system, the special Renaissance satellite systems, which can online monitor the movement of our special and any types of forces. Apart from that, in autumn, there was a special contract with the Finnish private companies, which have satellites for Arctic surveillance, which can see the picture through the clouds. We do understand that, and we mask our movement. We create the false movements, false defense lines to fight against these satellite systems.
You know, there's a changing perception here in the United States and in the West. About a month and a half ago, we were still saying that Ukraine is going to win this war, that the Russians are incompetent, they don't know how to fight. But I think reality on the battlefield has sobered up this assessment, and now there's talk about Ukraine not being able to accomplish its objectives, and that everybody's afraid of this Russian offensive that's getting ready to happen. But your presentation was sobering.
That's true. I'm going to give you some figures. You know, Ukraine is to be provided 300 tanks, but there is no proof to this figure. And Leopard 1, these old models, are going to be provided by the end of the year. So, in fact, Poland and Great Britain are the countries which are going to provide 30 tanks only in January on the whole front line. There were around 300 tanks destroyed. The Soviet tanks, which are not that bad, by the way. So the confrontation, like the Second World War, so the military industry of Russia is different from the U.S. military industry. In our military industry is mostly state-owned, and we have so-called preserved military enterprises that provide ammunition and shells. And right now, we have assembled a line lines 4 times faster based on the Soviet norms and regulations. Everything is in public in the American military enterprises, which produce 155mm shells. They are not capable of doing that so fast. That's why they have to move the reserves from Israel to Ukraine and from South Korea. So the pace of providing tanks, artillery systems, shells, and drones outpaces not only that of the USA, but the whole West. So we produce air defense rockets more than the whole world. So we stipulated those capacity to produce those mass and cheap equipment. You know, war is about math. It's about figures and numbers. You cannot do anything about that. And right now, our military defense industrial industry and sector is much more advantageous than that of the West. The American military defense system says that the refurbishment of these stocks takes 5 years. In high precision things and systems like Stinger and Javelin, it takes up to 7 years, because these productions should be started from scratch, as the Stingers were stopped and the private companies don't want to have these capacities. They don't have orders. So in these situations, it would be simple for Russia.
Here's the million-dollar question. Certain high-profile figures in Russia have talked about this war reaching a decisive moment sometime in August, September, October. When we just talked about the provision of Western technology, a lot of it seems not to be arriving in Ukraine until late summer, early fall, maybe even next year. The implication is, if this war continues for any length of time, that Ukraine might regain an advantage over Russia. Do you think Russia will be able to win this war to destroy the Ukrainian military by the end of summer, early fall this year?
We have a big chance to do that. We do realize that NATO hasn't joined the defense of Ukraine yet to the full extent. We are monitoring the increase in the military forces in the Eastern Europe, the Baltic states, Romania, and the Baltic states. Only American forces amount to 100,000, and additional equipment is coming. We don't understand, this is the second stage. We're not talking about Poland, which is openly saying that they want to engage in the conflict. Whenever the Poland joins the conflict, probably there's going to be 4 states. So we will see that Belarus is going to join Russia, and the President Lukashenko said a lot about that, and Poland said that if Belarus joins the conflict, Poland will join the fight with Ukrainians. I believe that in winter-spring campaign, so-called, we have a big chance to move up to the Dnieper River, to break this defense and to regain Donbas. If we look at Liman area, Ukraine doesn't have a very fortified defense line, and every day we keep on moving, and it is not a full offensive yet. So we're touching all the front line, we are holding the initiative, and whenever we see the weak points and spots, we're going to strike hard by tanks, which is going to break through this defense line by tanks T-90 breakthrough tanks. So we're increasing in our equipment component. So we're ready. The risks are high. if NATO is joining this conflict, but everybody realizes that the consequences might be very lethal using the nuclear weapons by the states. Neither Europe nor the USA don't want to get the battlefield on their territory. They understand that there is kind of a confrontation between the states, and through this conflict Russia has been weakened, but the world is being separated right now. And right now there is a de-dollarization process. The United States, from my perspective, is shooting its leg. It's using its resources as a weapon. It's not classified information that the American political leaders were very smart after the World War II, and within the Marshall Plan, they managed to impose dollar as the reserve currency, and now it can issue this print money, and now they're using the dollar as a weapon, and it makes its partners, Saudi Arabia, to give up that. And one of the examples, the second army in NATO, Turkish army, they're not allowed to buy F-16 jet fighters, and the Turks are going to buy different jet fighters, probably from Russia, from Korea, or from other states like China. So the United States is going to lose markets.
No, there's, I think, you know, there's three aspects to this conflict. There's the economic aspect, and as you indicated, I think Russia is coming out quite well in the economic aspect. The United States, as you indicated, has shot itself in the foot. Europe has definitely shot themselves in the foot. There's a political aspect. The future of NATO, you know, the European Union and NATO like to speak of unprecedented unity. They've never been more unified, but there appears to be serious fractures inside NATO and Europe, and many Europeans are starting to question whether or not they'd be better off with a European security organization that was separate from NATO. But now we come back to the military aspect of this. How does this war end? I mean, the Russians have said that they want to demilitarize the Ukrainian military. To me, that means the destruction of the Ukrainian military. They've said they want to denazify the Ukrainian government. To me, that means the elimination of the Zelensky government. Does this war end with Russian troops in Odessa, with Russian troops in Kharkov, with Russian troops in Kiev, with Russian troops on the Polish border? How do you see this conflict ending? In the West, they're talking about the Korea solution. That is to create a ceasefire, and then there will be a demilitarized zone where you have where Ukraine's military is still active, and then the Russian military be active, and it'll be a perpetual war situation. Is that something that would be acceptable to Russia?
You know, as a person who participated in the war, I'm always for any peace, as is going to end suffering of just the people. I would like to mention that the Peruvian shamans, which in January had a special operations, they said that the peace would be concluded in August. I would like to believe in their forecasts. But the goals of Russia in these special military operations don't have these specific lines, specific shapes. They are quite variable. So we need to move to the border of Poland and to change the political structure and the political regime of Ukraine as it is hostile to Russia. The terrorist attacks are going to be against Russia in the future if we do not do that. If Minsk agreements had been fulfilled and there wouldn't have been constant and bombardment of and shelling of Donbass, and there would have been provided special status, this conflict wouldn't have started at all. For us, it is important to provide the full security of our country. And we stated that clearly, crystal clear in 2021, that the Ukraine as a military state, which would be a total threat to our security, is unacceptable to Russia. What is Ukrainian leaders doing? Are doing that right now? They say that the objective is not that Russian troops should leave the Ukrainian territory. This is the division of Russia into separate states, Russian Federation into separate states and separate federations, and the destruction of the nuclear potential and our forces. This is an existential threat which is unacceptable to us at all. What is the final point for Russia? Of course, it is the change of the political leaders in Ukraine. It should be a neutral state. If tomorrow they say that they are a neutral state, as Switzerland or any other neutral state, that would be acceptable to us. They would give up an idea of joining any political and military blocs, not any threat to conduct terrorist attacks against Moscow or our state. We don't understand that if the front line is going to be like in the Korean scenario, kind of a demilitarized zone, that will allow Ukraine to get additional equipment, to get new high-tech equipment to train their army, and to start a new military campaign as kind of retribution. So that would be a war which will be conducted for a long period of time. I've heard the term that operation, if there is a wound, if you do not clean this wound, it will swell again. So the surgeons, the doctors say that this going to be full sanation of the wound, otherwise it will swell forever.
Now we come to the last question. Right now, relations between Russia and the West are, I believe, the worst I've ever seen, and I've been around a little bit. And this war will end someday. And when it does end, what do you think the path forward could be for Russia and the West to take an off-ramp from this current confrontation? Is it possible to repair relations? Can U.S. relations and Russian relations be repaired? Are we in a perpetual state of Cold War going forward?
You know, I'm going to voice our concept of Russian development, which has been voiced by our president, and we are moving to that. Look, in fact, right now Russia is not creating the Soviet Union 2.0, but it's creating a new union, Eurasian Economic Union, including five countries. It is not a military, it is a comprehensive economic union, and it bears some fruit. And it's going to be joined by other states, special status for the states, observers. This union starts to shape a new union with China. It's called the Shanghai Organization for Cooperation. So the goal and the objective set by China and Russia is called a big Eurasian partnership for the European Union states on equal right status, should work with Russia and with China. That's going to be the biggest continent, which is going to be self-sufficient and the most beneficial. But if it happens, if this continent exists, then the USA and Great Britain will not be able to use their colonial rent or so-called royalty, making money on that. So the objective of the USA and Great Britain is to kill this emerging union, which is in infant stage. Right now, there is a kind of division of Europe. We see how much pressure on Germany through Poland, how this economic potential is being weakened. You know, RAND Corporation provides these reports, and in January last year, they published a special report saying that for the United States, the movement and shift of production capacity from Europe to the U.S. will be a good thing. You know, the RAND Corporation provided a big report as well. They say that the this conflict for a long time is not beneficial for the Western countries. We need to sit at the negotiating table. We need to leave these territories to Russia, and the sanctions should be lifted then. That's going to be benefit for all of us. Considering that, we see that the United States and the military industry has made a lot of money. They have long-term contracts. They are moving forward. They are moving ahead. And so there is time to leave this conflict. And we see that probably the United States will look for exit points from these conflicts to sign an agreement with Russia, but not to lose an image, global image. They keep on saying about their global dominance, and there are some states which correspond to this image, and they want to keep their face. That's very important for them. To a particular extent, the world has two campuses, Russia, China, and other states, and on the other bank of the river, the U.S. and its allies, as our officials keep on saying, there's going to be a special solution out of this conflict. There's going to be a decision made. I believe it's going to happen this year.
Well, that's very sobering. Again, I want to thank you very much for coming, Andrei Klintsevich, military expert. I think anybody watching this has received invaluable insight into Russian thinking, and hopefully the right people in the West are watching this, and they're paying attention, and we'll make the right decisions going forward to try and bring out, as Andrei said, a peaceful outcome. At the end of the day, the lives and livelihoods of the civilians that are caught up in this war should be first and foremost in the minds of every politician. And let's hope that that's that. Remember, thanks for tuning in, and knowledge is power.